You don't want to hear my comments, probably. I think that the state has effectively criminalized being mentally ill. That there are many, many mentally ill people who, at a point of acute psychosis, are doing things that are criminal. As you recall, over 10 years ago, we had a radical shift in the insanity defense. That was the result of predominantly upon one incident, and that was the Charles Meach incident, where those unfortunate young people were killed by a person who was on some sort of furlough status from API. In law, we say that if individual cases make often bad law. A reaction to a specific crisis incident like that and a flood of public policy over that specific incident can sometimes make for bad law. So my opinion is that the reaction to the Meach case, the revision of the insanity defense, and a low public tolerance for people who are either inebriated or mentally ill, and a lack of, alternative response has made the Department of Corrections the holder not only of a significant population of the mentally ill, but also, in my opinion, we've recriminalized public inebriation also. It doesn't shock my conscience that we've done that. It simply means that if we're going to provide the services, if Corrections is going to provide the service, then Corrections needs the ability to do that. If public policy is going to shift that burden someplace else, then the resources need to go there.
I think make one statement if I can to follow up on this. I have found when I started trying to find out how come what was happening in there, as API's population goes down, DOC's comes up because they're controlled for medications in the API, but as they get out, no one is to tell them, hey, you need to take this pill at a certain particular time. So they commit something and ours goes up. And this is a shocker to me, because no one said, hey, you're going to have so many mental people to take care of too, when I came aboard, until I kicked in boxes and I found out that this happened. And that's how this whole thing came about, that I almost demanded that we have someone there to do it. So in the cook in a pretrial, we have one wing that has serious problems that are in that wing that we've had to set up for ourselves. They really technically should not be there, and to have the staff to handle those, there's problems. I mean, it just doesn't fit in to without us having this team with us.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on that, I guess these people have to be incarcerated in some fashion. The question in my mind then is it just as well that they be a part of Corrections, or should they be in an institution, the API, that perhaps would be as expensive?
Chairman, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that under the ALI test that was replaced, which was your insanity defense, chronically mentally ill people could be committed to the care and custody of the Commissioner of Health and Social Services for an indeterminate period of time. That what that meant is that some physician had to say this person's cured before they were released, and that's why mental hospitals were warehouses for the mentally ill. So in reaction to that historic trend, we find ourselves now where Corrections is doing that, but at least they're time certain sentences, and they're getting a third off for good time. So these people will be back in the community faster. If I seem particularly interested in this, I was the psychiatric social worker at API who helped start the first forensic unit for the mentally ill, and I was horrified by the move before I went to law school. And it's still a grievous burden to me.
I continue. Well, in your opinion, they're better off in the mental institutions where they can get the treatment than they would be.
No, my opinion is wherever we can give the treatment is where. And frankly, I don't find the correctional system so oppressive that it isn't, and it cannot handle the mentally ill population given the resources to do that. It's just, what happened last year, the people began to wake up and recognize that the Department of Corrections has the equivalent of a large mental institution's population. and we need those resources. We are working with API 2000 and the strategic planning effort of the Department of Health and Social Services to see how we can blend all of this.
Representative Carney, are you?
That's right.
Representative Hanley.
You had mentioned it before, but what were the numbers, percentage of people in corrections that are, have significant mental problems?
We have, there's a section in this report that is quite comprehensive that you can read, and we included it because of this problem. We wanted people to understand the problem, and there's probably 4 pages. But our forensic team have identified roughly 600, in excess of 600 prisoners, who have mental disabilities, over 300 of which are chronically or acutely mentally ill under DSM-3 diagnostic diagnoses. So we have 350 or so mentally ill who are the same types of people that you do see coming in and out of facilities like API, and another that are in that category of a personality disorder, though diagnostic, but from a diagnostic standpoint, can be diagnosed as having personality disorders.
Representative, continue.
Yeah. On the inebriation situation, is there an increase in the DWIs, and are you? Is there a problem still with scheduling on the 3-day sentences and the longer ones, or is that kind of moderating as the system figuring it out, or what's the story?
Well, I'd like to get a second on that.
I knew you could not talk about that subject.
It's my pet peeve, so to speak. But yes, there is a problem here. And, quote, it ain't going to improve until, like I've said several times, until society handles the situation. We are not handling this, as far as I'm concerned, properly. We need to know that there is a problem. The individual needs to know it. But if I knew that this door was open and I stepped out there and I fell that part of the street, I know there's going to be injury. When you get a DWI, I think the next day the person would appear in court. The next day he would serve his 3 days. We would not arrange for this individual to wait 2 or 3 or 4 months to go to a college dorm, which is almost what a halfway house is, to serve that time. You know what the penalty is, and you do it. The National Geographic magazine has a tremendous article in there about alcohol, about the different countries, about how they police it, and how the United States runs wild in the deaths that happen, that it doesn't happen in other countries. So if you've got a chance to read it, read it. But that is really one that we just don't handle, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not saying anything against man, but as time goes on, there's better processes to handle this. California is doing a terrific job in this. But we are not putting them in so that, and we've had several examples, that individual comes in and they have an attack or a medical deal, and it's cost us, in one specific case, I think it was $30,000 or $40,000 for a 3-day deal for arrest for a person that was either shoplifting or whether it was a DWI that came into the institution, because they're under our care. Under mine, they're going to be at home, they're going to be incarcerated, they're going to be restricted, but they're going to be out doing a specific job that needs to be done. And this is wide open. It's a real problem. I wanted to say that because you go ahead.
I'm glad to see that you put your watch down there, because we do have about 10 more minutes, and I know that you have some other things to cover. Representative Gonzalez had a
real
question.
Fast, I want to get back to mental health a little bit. Have we, first of all, there seems to be, there's a difference, between them, somebody's mentally ill and somebody that's criminally insane. Are we dropping that terminology, or are we using mentally ill now, or is it that we just don't need to use that terminology anymore, or is it because we don't have any criminally insane in our system?
Well, Representative Gonzalez, I don't know. I think the behavior is the same. The labels changed. We use the term criminally insane. I think you'll find in this report the term mentally disabled offender. It's the same person. That's basically what I can say, is that these are mentally ill people who are also committing crimes. That's all.
Thank you.
Please continue.
At page 40, where are we at here? Oh, at page 46, at the bottom, I'll just point to one of our objectives. This addresses the intermediate sanctioning work. We have a task force that's reviewing the feasibility of intermediate sanctions as alternatives to traditional incarceration. Intermediate sanctions, speaking of terminology, Representative Gonzalez, intermediate sanctions are also known as alternative punishments. If you've seen the term, it's the same thing. Okay? These are the areas that have sprung up outside in response to prison overcrowding. The goal is to maintain a high level of public safety through less costly supervision devices and programs. We have a draft report that I reviewed last week. The final report of our Intermediate Sanctions Task Force should be available within the next week to 10 days. We're also working hand-in-hand with the Sentencing Commission on this area of intermediate sanctions. The Sentencing Commission's emphasis will be on front-end sanctions, that is things like electronic monitoring for people who would otherwise be given bail so high that they stayed in facilities, that type of thing. They're exploring vehicles to get people out of jails under surveillance who otherwise would have ended up just staying in the facilities. That's a front-end sanction. The rear end is getting people out into the community once they've achieved community custody status or a status that they're safe under surveillance that would be somewhere between either a prison and a halfway house or between halfway house and total freedom. And those, and a lot of those are some of the same kinds of devices. And the other thing we're looking at is technical violators. We have a lot of people in our system who go from probation or parole release back into a hard prison bed without passing go for technical violations. That means that they have not committed a new crime. They've simply violated one of the conditions the court has laid down. So they go right from the community back to prison. We're exploring concepts like day treatment centers and or other types of quarterway, halfway back in houses, so to speak. And that's that whole area of intermediate sanctions. There will be a lot of information on that coming forward this year.
Could you just briefly mention what boot camps would be?
Boot camps is a concept that they're springing up outside, mostly directed toward youthful offenders. The concept is a shorter period of confinement with a high degree of structure would have some rehabilitative benefit or reformation benefit for the younger offender. I don't know what our report's going to say about boot camps for Alaska. I know the commissioner's been very interested in that subject. Historically, our inmate population is a little older than you find in other states. In fact, the inmate profiles will be interesting. We have a lot of demographic and inmate profile material in this report, and you can see where prisoners come from geographically, by race, by gender. There's a lot of very interesting information.
Please continue.
At page 47, there's reference to a department task at the top, reference to a department task force reviewing community residential center programs. We have another major interagency task force report that is available. I believe that was a part of your handouts, reporting on the utilization of halfway houses and soft beds. There are roughly 32 recommendations the task force made. The most significant thing about the report in my mind is that as a department, we invited our contract providers, members of the legislature. Ramona Barnes had a staff person who participated actively in this. It was quite an interagency effort addressing the CRC issue, and I'll simply leave the report with you. Incidentally, all of these reports is a part of the department's strategy. We figure by the time we get through it, the session will be over, and we'll have skated by. It was a joke, Madam Chair. Page 51. There's a reference on page 51 at the top that says the Department Task Force will conduct an employee survey. Just briefly, we have a lot of employees in the Department of Corrections who are second career employees with a diversity of skills. They're spread all over the state. And as if you've ever looked at our organization, we're a little bit lean when it comes to management. So all of these projects that we're taking on require a tremendous amount of effort on the part of our staff. So we're actually polling members of our department to find out if they have any skills that they would like to offer in computer skills. The goal here is to match employee talent with the needs of the department and see if they want to get involved.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you plan to spend the whole session going through this, I'd like to ask a specific question right now about an issue that we only have 5 minutes. I'm concerned about prison industries, specifically the meatpacking or the meat plant in the Palmer Wassel area, and what the plans are for that.
I'm not aware of any plans we have for the meat plant. The meat plant's functioning. It has been. We've actually had some inventory and control problems that we're looking at, even as we speak. Wally Roman should certainly give you an update. In fact, you'll find in here a summary of the meat plant and all of our other industries that will bring you really up to speed with statistics and whether we're making money or we are losing money and the amount of inmates involved and what the future of correctional industries is.
I knew we'd get to it eventually, but we only have 5 minutes, and I wanted to be, the reason I bring the question up is that I consider it to be very, very important to the agricultural industry in the Matanuska Valley and the whole state, as you understand the reasons for that. And I had heard rumors that there were people who thought it was not a good idea that we should be getting rid of it. I just want you to know that I support it, and if there's anyone who's trying to eliminate it, I'd like to be made aware of that.
Well, we are going to have somewhat of a problem with the James Farm, as it's known about. They have something like 400 head of cattle in there. We don't, the amount of the head of cattle that we received out of there is going to have an effect upon the utilization of the facilities at the slaughterhouse in there. And we don't know how we're going to do that. It's not as lucrative as it would be. I mean, not lucrative as such, but amount of cattle that we're going to be able to process in there because of that. That was a big area taken out. And that can be addressed. And I didn't see what the Boy Roman had in here in regards to it, but that is one thing that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks since it's really taken a different angle.
Well, thank you. I can see that you might have a logistics problem with 400 head of cattle at one time.
We do have just a short time, but I want to apologize for not laughing at your joke, but at the time that you were telling it, I was looking at the inmate profile, and I came across the Alaska Natives of 32% of the population. And so at that point, I was not listening to your joke. I am not expecting an answer from you at this point, but I would be interested to see how that tracks throughout, and I don't see that in the information here, but I'm sure that we can extract that type of information. I was most disturbed when I went through the Fairbanks facility, and I shared this with the commissioner yesterday, to find 48% of those in the Fairbanks Correctional Facility was Native. I was most disturbed by that. I was so disturbed, I went back the next day and met with the Native inmates, and we discussed that. But we have to get those figures down when we are 12 to 15% of the total population. Representative Gonzalez.
I'm sure. I know we're running out of time, so actually, I hate to cut you off, but I do want to make a request of both the commissioner and the deputy commissioner as to compassion. I myself think that we treat our prisoners too softly, you know, but that's another story. You know. I think that people who are there committed crime should be treated as according to what they did. But there's another side to this whole issue, and that's and especially referring to the parent of a person that perhaps has been incarcerated, you know. And I've heard several complaints, Commissioner, from those who claim that they've gone to visit their relative, you know, their son maybe, or something like that, and that they're treated rather harshly, like if they had committed a crime themselves. We have to remember that those parents have a very, very tough going after one of their own commits a crime, and that they have a burden on themselves, a harder burden than we can imagine. And when they go to visit their person, their son or whatever it is, they seem to feel like they're treated like if they had committed a crime themselves. And I think what we ought to do is perhaps feed it down through the department downright onto the guard and say, listen, you guys, these people come to visit their loved ones, and it's really not their fault if this other person committed the crime, you know, and I think that's where the word compassion comes in. And I hope that you could do that. I know that you will try.
I receive, I don't know, an average of 10, 15 letters a week, several phone calls that I accept. I usually try to take the one that I think that is out in left field more so and call those individuals after I've done investigation. And my quote now is, when they do call, are you hearing all of the story, or do you want to hear the rest of the story? And come to find out, about 99.9%, it is not true that from all the records and all the investigation that we do, my right hand of helping me do this is Diane here, of answering some of these letters after the information is had. That, and I agree, there are some individuals, frustrates me to no end, that they aren't firm, but yet understands both sides of the story. There needs to be work done in this area, I assure you. But it's not always that you're hearing the rest of the story that comes out.
Thank you.
Yes. We are soon out of time here, and I know that you wanted to share much more with us. I would suggest that the committee review the review of the Alaska Corrections report and the response to the recommendations, and perhaps that we might have another meeting such as this to continue this discussion. I also circulated, I believe it was yesterday, I don't know if the rest of the committee members have received it yet, but a memo asking if the committee were interested in going through the Lemon Creek facility and perhaps the Department of Corrections, just a walkthrough, and perhaps at that time we can also have more time to discuss some of these very critical issues that face the state of Alaska and our citizens of the state of Alaska. I very much appreciate, Commissioner, your candor in your presentation. I appreciate very much also the Deputy Commissioner Pruitt and his overview. I realize that we didn't get to everything. Is there any closing remarks anyone would like to ask or say? Representative Kerner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to make one remark and follow up on Representative Gonzalez's questions about compassion. I had the occasion to be in a prison at one time, and I came away feeling somewhat intimidated by the attitude of people. I think perhaps they get into the habit, certain habits of associating with people. I would take a good look at that, Commissioner, because I don't think anyone intended anything in the form of intimidation, but I experienced it, and I didn't have to deal with them very long.
This is, there's an area that that is called, industry fatigue or something along that particular line. That's a whole different field that we need to have certain classes, we need to have certain things that will rejuvenate this attitude. But when you work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, there has to be some fatigue that's put in there. That I don't agree with that. I think it's too much, and it should be. But it's the same as the mental, same as some of the, it's a huge area by itself that needs to be addressed. I'm now being able to understand why the four policemen in Los Angeles was on TV that was kicking the heck out of the person. If I traced the person 80 miles an hour and I had him five or six times and I got there, I don't know what my answer would have been, but I can see there is a breaking point. And I appreciate those comments. Frank, you're the same way on that.
Other questions at closing? Thank you very much for your time. We look forward to seeing you again. We are adjourned at 10:04.
Very good.
You like mouths, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.